nếu như
globalization to a large extent is actually removing responsibility from people within their own locality to take care of themselves.
We know that people do not know who rules or why and how he rules, and yet they know that there is a power that certainly rules.
We travel 1,000 miles in an hour and a half. We have traveled through whole areas of existence which we have not necessarily gained. We will pop into a Hindu village, but we won't know a damn thing about that Hindu village.
If you push that all the way, you see, what it means is that we will increasingly tend to inhabit all of these areas in depth simultaneously.
Južna hemisfera, poročamo o južni polovni.
Zaton dinastije in večni monopolizem. Pred dobrimi 4 leti se je v Angoli končalo obdobje skoraj 40 let, ko je to nekdaj portugalsko kolonijo vodil José Eduardo dos Santos. V zgodovino se je zapisal kot eden najdlje vladajočih predsednikov afriških držav, njegovo predsedovanje so zaznamovali državljanska vojna, monopolizacija gospodarstva in premožensko plemenitenje lastne družine, ki lahko na tem mestu okličemo za dinastijo. Uveljavil se je kot iluzoren politični voditelj, odtujen od prebivalstva, a je uspel v 38 letih svojega vodenja države uspešno prestati 27-letno državljansko vojno, večkrat spremeniti ustavo in centralizirati gospodarsko in predvsem politično moč v rokah svoje družine. Leta 2017 je dos Santos svoj predsedniški položaj in predsedstvo stranke ljudskega gibanja za osvoboditev Angole oziroma MPLA prepustil svojemu ožjemu sodelavcu Joao Lourencu, od katerega je bilo pričakovati, da bo nadaljeval z interesno politiko dos Santosa in tako njegovi družini omogočil vzdrževanje gospodarskega monopola v Angoli, sicer po Nigeriji drugi z nafto najbogatejši državi v Afriki. A kmalu po prevzemu oblasti je Lourenco pričel s čistkami, uperjenimi proti družini dos Santos. Z vrha največjega naftnega podjetja v državi odstavil hčerko dolgoletnega predsednika in najbogatejšo Afričanko Isabel dos Santos. Odstranil je dos Santosove strankarske zaveznike in dal naposled aretirati še njegovega sina. Prebivalcem Angole je obljubil boj proti močno ukorenjeni korupciji iz dobe dos Santosa, a je že po nekaj letih Lourencovega predsedstva postalo jasno, da gre zgolj za simbolna dejanja. V današnji južni hemisferi bomo tako poskušali doumeti, kako je dos Santosu uspelo vzdrževati svoj etablirani politični in gospodarski status in kako je le tega skrhal sedanji predsednik Angole João Lourenco. Politični začetki dos Santosa segajo v zadnja leta portugalske kolonialne nadvlade. Med osamosvojitveno vojno, ki je trajala od leta 1961 do leta pred osamosvojitvijo in prekinitve spopadov leta 1974, so se formirale 3 gverilske osamosvojitvene organizacije, ki so se po osamosvojitvi Angole udejanile kot politične stranke. Skupaj z dos Santosovo MPLA sta bitko za samostojnost bili tudi Nacionalna fronta za osvoboditev Angole oziroma FNLA in Nacionalna unija za popolno neodvisnost Angole, bolj znana pod imenom UNITA. Kljub temu, da so vse omenjene organizacije stremele k osamosvojitvi, so bila med njimi precejšnja trenja, pojasni Jon Schuber, politični antropolog z univerze v nemški Konstanci, rojen v angolski prestolnici Luandi.
Angola became independent in 75, and that was after a long and very painful independence struggle against the Portuguese, because Portugal was the last European country to let go of its overseas colonies. So when France and Great Britain sort of let their colonies gradually into independence in the early 60s. Portugal doubled down and said, no, these are our overseas provinces. They're an integral part of Portugal. We are developing these provinces for their own good. But of course, the same nationalist stirrings that you saw all over Africa, and in fact, the third world, were of course also felt in Angola. And what made it complicated is that in Angola, you had not one united liberation movement, such as you had in Mozambique or in Algeria, but you had three different liberation movements that were all three fighting the Portuguese, but also kind of rivaling with each other.
Po državnem udaru na Portugalskem in revoluciji Nagelnov, ki je odnesla portugalskega diktatorja Salazarja, so neodvisnost pridobile vse portugalske kolonije, vključno z Angolo. Kljub trilateralnemu dogovoru med organizacijami o poosamosvojitvenem sodelovanju in delitvi oblasti, je vsaka od treh organizacij neodvisnost razglasila posamično. Trenja med organizacijami in težnje po prevzemu centralne oblasti pa so neposredno po razglasitvah neodvisnosti vodile v državljansko vojno.
Finally, in 1974, there was a military coup in Portugal, and because the army leadership felt that these colonial wars were getting too costly and too painful also for Portugal, they overthrew the fascist or corporatist dictatorship in Portugal and started negotiating a settlement with the various liberation movements in Angola, but also in Mozambique and Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde, to, you know, transition them into independence. And the Alvor Agreement of 74 foresaw that these three liberation movements in Angola would hold elections and then share power. Only that never happened because the distrust between these three parties was very strong. And then, of course, Cold War dynamics didn't help matters because they all had different external patrons. And so when independence came, basically they unilaterally declared independence. So the MPLA held on to the capital and said, we're now, you know, independent Angola. And UNITA and FNLA, the two others, were in the inlands, in the second largest city, and said, we now declare Angola independent. And so basically civil war started immediately at, you know, at midnight of independence.
Med državljansko vojno, ki je zahtevala skoraj milijon žrtev, je centralno vlado v Luandi prevzela MPLA. Večina njenih članov je bila pripadnikov višjega razreda kreolskega porekla. Bili so torej potomci portugalskih kolonizatorjev, ki so na metropolitanskem območju Luande vodili naftna podjetja. To je gibanju oziroma stranki omogočilo močnejšo finančno osnovo kot FNLA in UNITE, ki sta delovali pretežno v notranjosti države. Matias Alencastro, politolog z Univerze v Braziliji, pojasni, da je MPLA stranka tradicionalnega tipa, ko govorimo o postkolonialni Afriki.
The MPLA is a traditional liberation party from an African anti-colonial politics in the sense that it was originally formed by Angolan leaders in exile in Portugal. It was supported externally by a number of Global South supporters, and it seized power, and perhaps that's what differentiates the MPLA from other parties in power in post-colonial Africa, is that it seized power a little bit by accident. It was not perhaps the party that was the most prepared to seize power in 1975, but it was the one that ended up with power. After that, it is a party that has been intrinsically linked with the rise of oil production in Angola, and it has deeply benefited from it, to the point that the continuous rise in oil production and, of course, oil rent has shaped the party from top to bottom.
MPLA, kljub temu, da je Angola deklarativno republika z večstrankarsko demokracijo, centralno vlado vodi vse od osamosvojitve. Stranka pa se je dokončno konstituirala s prihodom Dos Santosa na položaj predsednika stranke, ko je ta centraliziral naftna podjetja, s katerimi so upravljali strankarski funkcionarji. Dos Santos sicer ni bil prvotni kandidat MPLA po smrti prvega angolskega predsednika Agostinija Neta, a je prevladalo njegovo srednje razredno ozadje, saj naj bi tako predstavljal ljudskost za razliko od uveljavljenih kreolskih članov MPLA, ki so po večini odraščali na Portugalskem. Po prevzemu predsedstva stranke je Dos Santos postopoma ožal krog strankarskih odločevalcev in se tako med državljansko vojno sam etabliral v vrhu angolske politike.
Most importantly, it has verticalized power at the top, to the point that whereas the party in the 1980s, 1990s was competitive in terms that there were different camps inside the party, different competing visions and competing leaders. And from the 1990s, the party was completely centralized at the top in the heads of José Eduardo dos Santos and his family. That trend continued until José Eduardo dos Santos left power. And since then, the MPLA, there were a few attempts inside the MPLA to transform the party and change that cult of the leader and the hyper-centralized mode of power. But very little has changed effectively over the past 5 years.
Leta 2010 je pod Dos Santosom sprejeta tudi nova ustava. Ta mu je omogočila, da je v položaju predsednika države obenem opravljal funkcijo vodje izvršilne oblasti in vrhovnega poveljnika angolskih oboroženih sil. Z novo ustavo, ki je predvidela prve večstrankarske volitve, te so v Angoli izvedli leta 2012, si je zagotovil tudi možnost vnovične kandidature na volitvah, ki so potekale pod vodstvom MPLA, pojasni Schuber.
Already historically the whole public administration is under its control because they were the legitimate state. But through that, then they also have the absolute majority in parliament to change the constitution, which they do in 2010, and kind of also create basically building blocks to ensure that its dominance over Angolan politics remains. And then, of course, the constitutional change of 2010 is also counted as a reset. So only the first election after the constitutional change count as Dos Santos' first election, which then would allow him to run a second time. But then by that time, and this is, I think, where we get into the change now to Lourenço, the economic situation changes drastically. And that then leads to the change that we've seen now in the last 5 years.
Angola se je pod vodstvom MPLA in Joseja Eduarda dos Santosa v hladni vojni uveljavila kot podpornica vzhodnega bloka. Z osamosvojitvijo je MPLA nacionalizirala naftna podjetja in sprva načrtovala gospodarstvo na temeljih sovjetskega modela planskega gospodarstva. Po propadu socialističnega vzhoda pa je Dos Santos hipno privatiziral državna podjetja in na vodilne položaje namestil ožje sodelavce in zlasti svoje družinske člane.
And so basically you have this guy who managed to secure the dominance of this party through radical shifts, like from communism to democracy, but also from planned economy to free market capitalism. So you have like these anarchic privatizations in the early 90s, where some people get spectacularly rich on the privatization of formerly state-owned assets. Some of the old companies and manufacturing plants that the Portuguese had left. Angola had not a flourishing, but an incipient manufacturing sector that, of course, went down the drain. And then in the 90s, basically all these property assets get liquidated and privatized and then used to do like deals, like import-export deals mainly, because you have such an import-dependent economy because of the war. Nothing gets produced in the inland because it's full of mines and there's a conflict. So everything has to be imported and the country has the money to pay for that.
Dos Santos tako še danes velja za avtoritarnega voditelja, ki je skozi 40 letja vladanja zasnoval postkolonialno podobo Angole.
He was an extraordinary leader in the sense that he was a war commander, a party builder and a state controller, but he was also a very repressive and authoritarian personality that was able by means of the oil industry to centralize all power in Angola in his hands. That has left very little space for other leaders within the MPLA to develop and to emerge, and the opposition to actually have a voice, and civil society to play a role in politics. So Dos Santos was this dominant figure that once he left, it was very, very difficult to fill the void and to, for the new president, João Lourenço, to become another Dos Santos. And in that sense, he's remarkable because he deeply shaped the nature of the Angolan regime in the post-colonial years. But that also says a lot about how nocive he was for Angola and his negative impact overall.
V zadnjem desetletju Dos Santosovega predsedovanja se je meja med družinskimi in državnimi posli še bolj zameglila. Na vrhuncu vpliva družine Dos Santos v prvih letih prejšnjega desetletja so bila državna podjetja skoraj brez izjeme prepredena s funkcionarji blizu predsednika. Najstarejša Dos Santosova hči Izabel je bila takrat lastnica največjega telekomunikacijskega podjetja v državi. Lastila si je nekaj medijskih hiš v Angoli in na Portugalskem in vodila največje državno naftno podjetje. Najstarejši sin dolgoletnega predsednika José Filomeno, bolj znan kot Zenu, pa je bil takrat na čelu državnega premoženskega sklada. Ostali od skupno desetih Dos Santosovih otrok so prav tako zasedali visoke položaje v angolskem gospodarskem in kulturnem sektorju. Po mnenju Jona Šubera je bilo prav nenadzorovano nameščanje sorodnikov na vidna mesta v gospodarstvu povod za zaton in izgubo vpliva dinastije Dos Santos.
Last, I think, 4 years of his rule were catastrophic. I mean, they were already not very good before because of all that wealth, very little trickled down to ordinary Angolans. But what he did, and that was, I think, his main mistake, is in these last years, really empower his own family and put his own children into key positions of the economy. And that created, like when then the oil price crashed and the economy took a turn for the worse, that kind of focalized popular discontent on the Dos Santos family, but also within the MPLA, people started grumbling, like, how come these young kids, I mean, young kids, sort of mid-30s, are now, you know, head of the sovereign wealth fund, head of the state oil company? That won't do. Like, there's not enough money left. So if these guys keep stealing everything, there's nothing left for us. And I think the combination of pressure from within the MPLA, but also popular pressure, and the MPLA realizing that popular discontent was focusing on Dos Santos as a figure, made them realize that for the only way for the party to survive was to change leadership. And so they then select, like Dos Santos initially wanted his vice president to become president after him, but that the party refused because it was not someone who came through the ranks of the party and through this history of liberation struggle. So the compromise candidate was someone who was seen as loyal to Dos Santos, but also had grown through the army and the party ranks, who was then Minister of Defense, the current president, João Lourenço.
Centralizacija moči je v mlajših generacijah Angolcev, ki niso bile izrazito obremenjene z državljansko vojno, vzbudila nasprotovanje monopolističnemu vodenju države. Posledično so bile težnje po predaji predsedniškega stolčka zaradi strahu pred izgubo oblasti znotraj MPLA vse intenzivnejše.
At some point, like, people start realizing that, like, it's enough. And so the anger, the popular anger starts growing, which is something that up until 2011, the MPLA had virtually no popular opposition because people were still too traumatized by the history of the war, too just relieved that the war was finally over. And then all of a sudden, there's like an incipient sort of youth movement, a younger generation that has no longer the same traumatisms of the war than their parents had. And I was like, this is enough. Like, we Africa's second largest oil producer. How come we don't have roads? How come we don't have functioning schools or functioning hospitals? Like, how come I still live in a shack with no running water and electricity? And so I think that this is where it becomes a bit more complicated then for the Dos Santos family, which then ultimately leads to the handover of power within the party.
Navkljub dolgotrajni politični karieri, José Eduardo dos Santos nikoli ni veljal za izrazito karizmatičnega voditelja. Tudi med prebivalstvom Angole ni veljal za posebej priljubljenega, saj je večino njegovega mandata zaznamovala državljanska vojna, ki je usodno polarizirala prebivalstvo. S širitvijo zavedanja o koruptivnih in nepotističnih manevrih nekdanjega predsednika, zlasti med urbanim prebivalstvom, pa se je nezaupanje angolskih državljanov še poglobilo, pojasni Alen Castro.
For about 2/3 of his mandate, of his time in power, he was governing in a civil war, in a time when the state controlled very little, very few parts of Angola, and so his power was mostly concentrated in the capital, Luanda. Of course, there are parts of the Angolan population that are closely identified with the history of his party, that are closely identified with the history that the party wants to tell about what were the post-colonial years and the civil war. And but I think that whereas Dos Santos may have been popular and supported by a frankly high number of people in the first two decades of the 21st century, I guess now it's not the case anymore, because it has become clear for a lot of people, and especially the middle to upper class that live in more urban areas, that have more access to information, and they are getting a feeling that Angola missed a cycle, a unique opportunity to develop under Dos Santos, because of a lot of that oil wealth was squandered.
Sicer je bilo po Dos Santosovem umiku pričakovati, da ga bo nasledil eden od njegovih otrok, a so bile strankarske težnje po umiku družine iz angolske politike v strahu pred porazom na drugih večstrankarskih volitvah leta 2017 močnejše. MPLA je tudi na pobudo Dos Santosa za kandidaturo na volitvah naposled izbrala nekdanjega obrambnega ministra Joao Lourenca. Lourenco je na volitvah zmagal skoraj dvotretinsko podporo in tako postal tretji predsednik Angole. Kljub dejstvu, da je njegovo kandidaturo podprl tudi Dos Santos, pa je kmalu po volitvah postalo jasno, da sta vladanje Lourenca in močna vpletenost družine Dos Santos v gospodarstvo nezdružljiva.
He is a very different leader from Dos Santos. He's from a different generation. He's from a different political culture. He was a challenger of Dos Santos years before he came to power. And Dos Santos chose him as his successor, not just out of admiration of Lourenco, but because probably he didn't have much of a choice, because Lourenco was a power player within the party and was seen as a person that could balance the different forces within the party. Lourenco tried to break away very clearly and strongly with Dos Santos in the beginning of his mandate by allowing or even encouraging judicial prosecutions against allies of Dos Santos, including family members of Dos Santos.
Tako kot Dos Santos, tudi Lourenco ne velja za karizmatično osebo, a se je v začetku mandata poskusil opazno bolj približati prebivalstvu, kot pa je to počel njegov predhodnik.
They're both really not charismatic leaders. They're very wooden, you know, they're a bit dull. But Dos Santos could sort of turn on the charm. And Lourenco went down a bit of a different route. So before the elections, people were like, oh, he's not very smart, you know, he's a bit of a dullard. The brains in this couple is his wife, who worked for the World Bank. And you know, he'll be a puppet of Dos Santos. But of course, what he managed to do then after the elections is A, by unleashing this flurry of replacements and dismissals and also prosecutions of people who had gotten rich in the old system, but also just changing the style. Like Dos Santos was very invisible to the population. Like in Luanda, you had these monstrous traffic jams because like main streets were cordoned off by military police for hours. Until then, you know, the motorcade, like 20 vehicles, like jeeps with tinted windows, would just rush through, and then he's gone, and no one ever sees him. And Lorenzo kind of changes that because he's like, okay, one car, one escort, I'll stop at red lights, I'll not block off the streets. You know, he gets out of the car at some point, like people see him. And compared to like these 38 years of percentage where you have this invisible figure, people are like, oh, you know, it's totally different.
Lorenzo je prebivalcem Angole po volitvah obljubil neizprosen boj z izjemno razširjeno korupcijo. Najprej iz vrha državne naftne družbe so na Angolo odstranil Isabel dos Santos. Nato je podoben manever uporabil, ko je njenega polbrata Zenuja odstavil z položaja direktorja državnega premoženskega sklada. Kmalu zatem se je ta znašel v priporu, na kar je bil obsojen na 5 let zaporne kazni, ker naj bi iz države poskusil pretihotapiti okoli 400 milijonov evrov. Nato je vrhovno sodišče zamrznilo premoženje Isabel dos Santos, na kar so januarja letos luč sveta ugledali dokumenti znani pod imenom Luanda Leaks, ki dokazujejo koriščenje družine dos Santos na račun angolskih državnih podjetij. Najhujše je doletelo ravno otroke nekdanjega predsednika, saj slednji uživa imuniteto, ki mu poteče čez slabega pol leta. Četudi je Joao Lourenco praktično izkoreninil vpliv družine dos Santos, pa je po čistkah tudi sam začel uporabljati podobne metode, razloži Alen Castro.
I do think that Lourenco wants to achieve two things. First, he wants to show that he is no puppet of dos Santos, and that was very clear from the beginning that he wanted to show that. Second, that he wanted to show that he had a different vision for the country, and that he understood the challenges that the country needed to face. And finally, I think he also understood very clear that for him to stay in power and for him to be able to steer the country, to navigate through Angolan politics, he needed to do a lot of what dos Santos used to do, which is place his allies, control some sectors of the economy, rely on people in the private sector who are close to him. So he didn't want to be dos Santos, but he didn't abandon the dos Santos methods of doing politics.
Joao Lourenco je s čistkami napovedal novo obdobje v angolski zgodovini. Prav tako je uveljavil vsaj neko mero svobode govora, ki je bila pod dos Santosom zgolj pobožna želja. A začetna vnema novega predsednika je za voljo pretencioznega reakcionizma kmalu naletela na val skepticizma med državljani Angole.
That's just symbolic politics, right? It doesn't actually change the substance of what is being done, and that's, I think, where now the disillusionment creeps in. 4 years in and 1 year ahead of the elections, like people are very dissatisfied because he started off so well and raised people's hopes that there was a change in tone. Like all of a sudden people, like in newspapers and on the television, opposition all of a sudden had some space to voice critical opinions. Even journalists could mildly criticize the government, which they could never before under the center. So there's a really change in tone. But in substance, in essence, people are now getting a bit more, skeptical, disappointed, in fact. And I think one of the other characteristics of his rule is that people say he's a ditherer, like he doesn't take decisions, he's not proactive, he's reactive. He kind of waits, ponders, then takes a decision, and then often backpedals when it doesn't work. And that we've seen quite a bit in the past few years.
Performativni akt aretacij in odstavitev je sprva požel odobravanje zunanjih investitorjev, ki so v Lourencu videli antipod nekdanjega predsednika, predvsem ko je šlo za trgovanje z nafto, ko je cena leti močno upadla. Kadrovski spektakel in odpiranje gospodarstva investitorjem poobljubljenega izboljšanja življenjskih razmer v državi nista dosegla.
When the oil price crashed, it became much less attractive to foreign investors and foreign partners, and all of a sudden, like, also the European Union and some bilateral partners became more critical openly, because before they were like, you know, turning a blind eye to get access to the oil money. And So unleashing this very spectacular, hyper-visible fight against corruption, against some of these prominent and vilified and unpopular figures, such as Isabel dos Santos, such as Zeno, and some of these old ministers and generals who have gotten spectacularly rich, is of course a way of signaling to the out, I mean, yes, to Angolans, and it did make him very popular in the first year. It's like, yes, finally, you know, someone. But of course also to the IMF and foreign investors. It's like, no, no, we're serious. Like, we're doing business. We're back in business. Angola is a safe country for you to come and do investments. And so all of that, like the fight against corruption, the spectacular prosecution of some highly visible people, but of course, lots of others that don't get prosecuted. And then the agreement with the IMF are all like the big successes of Lourenço. But of course, in practice, that doesn't really improve the situation for Angolans.
Relativna neuspešnost izpolnjevanja obljub Lourenca je po mnenju Jona Šubera med državljani zbudila tudi določeno nostalgičnost do časov, ko je država vodil Dos Santos.
Even people who, you know, are educated and critical now sort of say, well, you know, Dos Santos and his family, they stole, but at least there was some money to go around, money was circulating and jobs were being created. Now there's just no money left and no jobs. So yes, Isabel may have been bad, but she was at least a good entrepreneur. You know, she created jobs. And same like Dos Santos, well, you know, he might not have been great, but he was better because, yes, at least we had bread on the table. So I think there's a bit of a reevaluation of his legacy. I don't necessarily think it's a very just or critical reevaluation, because I think it's because so much was stolen that the country did not use these 10 years of wealth to build up a better, fairer economy. But of course, people, you know, they feel what they, you know, what they suffer. And at the moment, they have no money. Like, the Kwanzaa is worth nothing and losing value every day. There's no food in the stores. It's like, there's no jobs. It's very depressing. And so that I think it's more the economic situation than some nostalgia for like standing or image or charisma, because I don't think he had much of that.
Ljudsko gibanje za osvoboditev Angole oziroma MPLA je pretekli teden potrdilo vnovično kandidaturo Joao Lourenca na prihajajočih volitvah, ki bodo potekale avgusta. UNITA, tradicionalna nasprotnica MPLA, se je v predvolilni kampanji z manjšima strankama že združila v koalicijo Angolci potrebujemo spremembe in se bo tako na volitvah, katerih regularnost je odvisna predvsem od volje Lourenca, prvič poskusila pospeti na oblast, zaključi Matias Ale Castro.
The opposition is more active than ever, is very organized, has new leaders and wants a competitive election. And now it's up to the government to decide whether they want to hold a competitive election or whether they want to do a sham election as they did it in the past. What's certain is that the decision is in the hands of Lourenço. If the government wants to do a real election, he can. There's nothing that stops him from doing it. But if he wants to manipulate the election, block the opposition from running properly, et cetera, which he does look like he's willing to do, then we'll say that Angola is not at all going, walking, leaning towards a democratic change.
Zdi se, da je Joao Lourenco z vrsto čistki in aretacij do dobra preoral angolski politični prostor, pa čeprav znotraj desetletja vladajoče stranke. Vpliva družine Dos Santos vendarle ni izničil, otroci dolgoletnega predsednika imajo v Angoli še zmeraj nezanemarljiv vpliv, predvsem, ko govorimo o medijskem prostoru. Z nafto bogata Angola je po osvoboditvi izpod portugalskega kolonialnega jarma zamrznila v času, zaznamovanem z družinskim monopolizmom, ki ga je Lourenco le interesno preoblikoval. Prihajajoče volitve po vsej verjetnosti ne bodo spremenile operacijskega modusa v državi, bi pa lahko učinkovito zamajale zgodovinsko nadvlado MPLA. Pod ekvatorjem je odgovore iskal Matija.